Welcome to the Nerd Party.
Oh, Miles here.
It's that time again. Your Owl Post for the week is freshly delivered. And of course, I am just one of the hosts here, Matthew Rushing. And with me, as she is every single week, the delightful Drea Kaufman.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing?
Good. Good. How are you?
Yeah.
I always feel we recorded this week and it was a holiday week and there was a holiday kind of in the middle of the week, and I feel like that just throws off my whole week.
Yeah, yeah. No, me too. That, in fact, the holiday we're speaking of is the 4th of July was on a Thursday, which made me keep thinking that it was Saturday.
Yes.
So the next day was Sunday, and so, yes, it was very strange. Yeah, it was very difficult to try and, you know, be in the flow of things. So,
and it felt like Sunday and you like wrapped up your weekend and we're going back to work and then it was one day and then you're like, what? And not in a pleasant
way. What a
way.
Mess. Yeah. So, we're here to talk about the 30th chapter of Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix as we talk about Gwop. I think that's how you say it. And there's no good way to say this name, honestly. Gwarp. Gwarp, 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 grip. Anyway, but before we do that, you know, don't forget you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're over on Apple Podcasts or iTunes, please do give us a star rating and review. Let us know your thoughts on the show. It does help other people find the show. You know, there are a lot of Harry Potter podcasts out there. So if you like Owl Post and what we do, let us know. Let people know. And then we'll read your review on the show. Again, though, you can find us wherever you get your podcasts. So anywhere podcasts are gotten, you can find Owl Post. You can also find us on Twitter at Join Nerd Party. We're on Facebook at facebook.com/TheNerdParty. The Nerd Party is also online at thenerdparty.com. We have so many podcasts that you'll want to be checking out there. I mean, we got pretty much every fandom covered. And then, last but not least, maybe you'd like to send an email to Drea and I. You can do that at thenerdparty.com/contact. Choose a show, choose Outposts, and those will come to Drea and I. So yeah, make sure you're following us and liking us and all those places. And yeah, hit us up with your thoughts in any of those social media platforms. And, you know, we're even on Instagram over at The Nerd Party. This is, I like the beginning of this chapter because we're kind of dealing with the fallout of Fred and George leaving Drea, and the fact that what they did with the swamp is still there because Umbridge and Filch can't figure out a way to get rid of it, and nobody else is going to help them get rid of it. So, no, they just kind of like cordon it off, you know, they like rope it off and just leave it there, and just like the impact of them leaving is pretty massive. I mean, it has caused the rest of the students, you know, to want to kind of like uprise against Umbridge as well. And yet things are not going great for her, honestly.
No, everything sort of just became very chaotic at the beginning of this chapter, talking about how none of the teachers are helping and none of, you know, and Peeves is apparently off creating just the most nonsense they have ever seen. And there's a part here where they mention he swears he saw McGonagall walk by Peeves while he was trying to undo like a chandelier. And she tells him, no, it screws the other way. it unscrews the other way, and then kept walking. Which, you know, what we know of McGonagall, that's very much so a stark contrast from what we've seen in the past, where in all the other books she's been, you know, yelling at Peeves.
Mm-hmm.
So it's super interesting. But yeah, it's
well, and on top of that, I love, like, again, you know, things aren't going well for Umbridge. Somebody has slipped a Niffler into her office, which has stolen all of her shiny objects, which is just hysterical. And the fact that, you know, nobody is helping her, so she can't keep up with everything. And, you know, none of the other professors are helping her other than Filch, and even the Inquisitorial squad, with all of them together, they just can't keep up with all the mischief that's going on. Plus, well, apparently the twins left a massive amount of, they must have like sold all of their stock of, you know, their little skiving snack boxes, so the things that make you sick. And every time in her class, people just keep, you know, throwing up or like vomiting, or, you know, they got nosebleeds or fevers, or they've got all sorts of, I mean, every nasty thing you can think of a bodily function is happening to people in her class. And she's forced to allow them to leave because otherwise she can't run a class at all. So it's like everything is going wrong for Umbridge right now, and it's just kind of glorious.
It's just kind of the most wonderful thing we've seen all book. Beyond, you know, Dumbledore's magic, like, majestic exit. You know, this is up there
yes.
with us.
No, I think you're right. Absolutely. It's interesting, too, because we get this little conversation between Harry, Ron, and Hermione about in class. They're in class together. They're in charms. And they're talking about Montague and about him, you know, having returned, and that the fact that he still hasn't gotten better. And Hermione's like, should we tell them we know what happened? And Ron and Harry are like, no, he deserved what he got. Who cares if he's permanently injured? And this was an interesting conversation because I think this is one of the places where I feel a little bit more like I'm on Hermione's side with this, because, you know, regardless of who this person is, do they deserve to be treated like this? And I think, you know, I think Hermione has a point, but she's definitely not going to win this one with the boys who are like, screw him.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think, I don't know, I feel like this kind of topic comes up often when it comes to fighting and wars and things like that, right? Like, you kind of think about it like a war, then no, most of the time in war, you don't help the other side. And you would kind of think along the lines of Ron and Harry. But when you're thinking about school and kids and teaching and learning and being compassionate, then yeah, you should absolutely fall more on the Hermione side, you know? And I'm surprised in this section only because this is very kind of uncharacteristic of Harry. He usually is the one who's kind of on Hermione's side. He'll do the right thing, you know, even when, you know, Ron's like, no, man, why would you do that? You know, Harry still usually will do the right thing. I think that in this instance, I think Harry and Ron don't actually feel like a permanent disfigurement or a permanent, I don't think that they think of it as him being hurt. They think of it as him being embarrassed or, you know, just like out of their way or something like that, where Hermione's kind of thinking about this more from a human element of, you know, this is scarring him for life, whether it be physically or emotionally. So, you know, it's interesting because I can kind of see both sides in this situation, and we get such a tiny snippet of it that it's, you know, it's over very quickly after it starts. But I feel like I would also be on Hermione's side. Like, if we know what's wrong, tell someone, walk away, let them fix it. You know, like there's a middle ground here. But this is sort of where we start to see some lack of empathy and compassion in Harry, which is very uncharacteristic of him.
Yeah, it is. And I think what's interesting is that you can kind of understand a little bit of why he feels that way. Although, again, I don't agree with him feeling this way. You know, like, I don't think it's the right way to feel. And I would interject too. There is the possibility that Hermione is being slightly over exaggerated. She's over exaggerating here. And so there's always that possibility, but still, for them to have such a lack of care or thought process for her or for Montague is not great. You know, it doesn't reflect well on them. And so I think we do kind of have a place here where, you know, they kind of do need to reset their priorities. And I
kind of think about it like, this is almost a parallel to what he saw his parents go through in Snape's vision, right? So if you took this selective memory, knew nothing else about Ron and Harry and Hermione, and showed this scene to their kids, you know, 20 years in the future, like, I imagine they would have a similar reaction to what Harry had when he saw his dad torturing Snape, right? It's maybe not quite as extreme, but that same thought process is there, and that same approach is sort of being shared, and that it's an isolated thing. It doesn't represent their character, but here he is making a very similar choice as his dad made at about the same age. So it's really interesting that she sort of slips that in to show, and I'll be interested to see, because I haven't read this book in a long time, if she makes a callback to that. I mean, that would have been, I think she's mirroring that just a little bit in this instance.
Yeah, no, I think that's a really great pull. And, you know, it makes a lot of sense to kind of see that. And I think, you know, it does a great job of, you know, showing how Harry was so kind of judgmental about his family there, about his parents, especially his father. And what we see here is that, you know, no 15-year-old is exempt from this kind of behavior. You know, and that you don't always make the most rational decisions with things. And so, and that there is emotion involved in that, and that emotion clouds your judgment and makes you do things that aren't necessarily wise. And so I think, again, it's a smart thing for her to add here, especially after we talked about, you know, everything with Snape's memory, you know, to, like you said, to see Harry then kind of make a decision that is very similar to this. And so, yeah, it's really smart. I like it. And I also like, this is really interesting, that they start talking about where they got the money. The boys, you know, the twins got the money for all of this, to put all this together. You know, how could they open up their own joke shop? Where did they get this money? And how Ron...
Because Ron's afraid his mom's going to blame him for the twins leaving. When he finally gets his next letter from home, and that kind of leads down this path of, like you're saying, mm-hmm. where did they even get the money to do this?
I really like that Harry just kind of confesses here. No, I was the one. I gave you know, them the money. My winnings from the Triwizard Tournament, because I didn't want them, and I feel no regret for it whatsoever. Because I think we need a joke shop at this point in our lives. So, and I love that Ron is so excited, because, like, Mom can't blame me now. This is great. And she can't be mad at you, Harry. This is the best day of Ron's life.
Well, I love, he's like, can I blame you? And he's like, yeah. I mean, if she thinks they're stealing cauldrons instead, yeah, you might as well. Like, I just love that he's, like, super sulking about this, but, like, Ron's just like, oh my gosh, this is amazing.
Yeah, I love it too. I think it's really fun to see that. And I also think it's funny because, you know, Hermione's not too thrilled necessarily with what this happens, and she kind of, like, starts to bring something up, and Harry's like, look, just let it go. And she's like, oh, no, that's not what I wanted to bring up. I'm sorry. I wanted to bring up the fact that, have you talked to Snape about more occlumency lessons? And that does not make Harry feel better.
No, it's interesting, because I feel like this is a little bit of a shock to Hermione that Harry keeps secrets from them, right? Like, I feel like this is kind of the instance where it comes out that Harry doesn't necessarily tell them everything. And that, you know, so she kind of takes a more important topic that she feels like he's holding back on, because, you know, we've kind of been through in the last few chapters how he never shared anything that he went through with Snape with them and why it stopped. And, you know, she's a smart lady. She doesn't believe that he just magically mastered it and it's all said and done and everything, you know, is good to go. Like, I think that she uses that as her opportunity to be like, okay, well, you held that from us for a long time because it was something we didn't want to hear. So you know, what else are you not telling us that we don't want to hear? And kind of takes it to a more serious topic and uses that as like the thought. You can see like, you can see her thought process playing out as you're reading this as to how she is getting to her point and how she's like, all right, well, you know what? I'm not going to focus on this one that doesn't matter. I'm going to focus on the one that matters. And I'm going to see if I can drive home an issue and get you to tell me what I know you're not telling me. And it's kind of that moment where that is confirmed for her that he's holding things back and he's not sharing and that there is more going on than he's willing to tell them.
It's really interesting because Harry has this difficult process going on for him right now. You know, there is a lot going on, and I love the way that, you know, he lies to them about what he's been, you know, dreaming about and the fact that he has been continuing to dream about the Department of Mysteries corridor and getting into this cavernous room that's full of all these glass spheres and just saying like, it's a bit further. And Hermione being like, you are trying to block it out of your mind, aren't you? And he's like, of course I am. And I love the way that Rowling just kind of makes this little aside as, you know, the narrator talking about the problem is for Harry too, though, is that they have so much going on with school that by the time he gets to sleep, like his brain is just kind of like blah, you know, like that's kind of the way she puts it. Like there's just so much going on in his brain that he doesn't have time to really think about anything, you know? And so this is kind of the last thing on his mind of the idea of occlumency. And, you know, it's just really difficult for him. And so I like the way that she puts the blame on Harry for not confiding in his friends and keeping this from him. But there are other factors into this other than just that. So it's like the perfect storm of things happening for Harry right now.
We've talked a little bit about how a lot of her themes throughout the books are about like mental health and struggling with mental illness and depression and things like that. And I feel like this is that concept kind of translates back to that again. In that, you know, when you are spiraling or you're depressed or you're suffering through a lot of those things, the smallest of things can seem so overwhelming and like you don't have this like mental ability to process and cope right now.
Right.
And that is exactly what's happening to Harry is he doesn't have the mental availability, be it because of school or everything going on or just a combination, and he's exhausted and, you know, he's constantly, even when he's asleep, he's not really asleep, right? So all of this happening is just created, like you said, this perfect storm of his inability to fix it. And he doesn't have the energy to like talk with Harry and Hermione because that takes effort. He doesn't have the energy to fix it himself. He doesn't have the energy to ask for help. Like all of these things really resonate with somebody who's suffering from like depression or suffering from anxiety or something like that. So, you know, this is kind of a perfect example of what someone who suffers from social anxiety or, you know, just in general anxiety and how you know the best thing to do and the easiest thing to do. And oh, it sounds easy just to talk to somebody and get help. But the act of doing that alone, his brain is, I always like to think of it, his brain is just like mush. It's just gone. There's nothing left. He just can't. And there's no way to explain that. And she does a really nice job of kind of painting that picture for you and having put all of these things on his plate. So you get why he's feeling this way. So I think this is just one more opportunity she takes to sort of weave that storyline and that thought process and that kind of overarching theme of the series into what's happening here and try to get you to understand.
It's just the smartest thing here. Again, one of the things that I love so much about this book and you were just kind of mentioning is there's a lot of nuance in this book, right? Like I feel like the thing that I like about, say, the third book or this fifth book is the fact that Rowling is really working on the nuance of the story, the nuance of the characters, what's going on with them. And this book truly does, you know, it's large in size, but the whole point of that is to allow her the time to really begin to explore the inner world of these characters and the impact that all of these events are actually having on these characters. You know, like when you think about all that's happened to Harry since he, you know, became a wizard at 11 years old, realized that, you know, gets told that's what he is and gets introduced into this world, and his whole history gets turned upside down with everything that he knows. You think about all of that, and so you realize this character has to find a way to be able to begin to try and process all that. And I think what we're seeing here is that Harry is slowly losing the ability to completely process everything he's going through because it's just too much. And it is going to, I mean, spoiler alert, it is going to come to a head in this book in one of the last chapters. Like, it is finally going to explode all over the place. So looking forward to getting to that. But before we do, there's a Quidditch match. And poor Harry and Hermione honestly don't even get to watch this Quidditch match against Ravenclaw because Hagrid asks them to come to the Forbidden Forest with him because he's got something to show them, finally.
He comes to them during this Quidditch match as just kind of, just get a bad feeling. In the pit of your stomach, kind of listening to your gut, and you're just like, oh, nothing good is going to come from this.
Yeah, no, I mean, and so what we find is we finally get the answer to what happened to Hagrid, why he was so late. It turns out that his mother had another child. This time, the child is much more giant than Hagrid, even though for giant size, he's still relatively small. He's only 16 feet, so, you know, a bit only. Tiny for a giant. Yeah. And
NBD, only 16 feet.
Yeah, exactly. And so Hagrid feels sorry for him because he's getting picked on by all the other giants because he's too small. And so he brings him with him home, and this is what took him so long to get home. But it's also been the thing that's keeping Hagrid looking so disheveled all the time and beaten up because he's literally been getting beat up by his bigger, younger brother or half-brother. And the reason he's bringing them here is because he's worried that he's going to be sacked soon from Hogwarts and he wants somebody to go to his brother and continue to kind of look out for him. And he's been trying to teach him some English and everything, and he wants Harry, Ron, and Hermione to do this if he does get the sack, which they're pretty reticent to do.
I have some very interesting thoughts on this section, because the whole story of him telling Hermione and Harry that they... that he brought him back, and what part of what took so long is that his brother didn't really want to come with. And they kept asking, well, why did you make him? Why didn't you leave him? He's like, oh, it wasn't right for him. But it kind of, to me, Hermione so clearly understands, like, this is not right to force him to live in a life that he doesn't want. But, like, it's one of those things where, like, when you think about the same thing that she's trying to do to the house elves, mm-hmm. and she's trying to free the house elves into a life that they don't want, like, she doesn't see that. Mm-hmm. But she's so hypocritical in this situation. And I just love that how clearly that gets painted and how much of an outrage she kind of has about it, but does not see how she also is doing that same thing. And it really just talks about how our passions and our love for things and our compassion can be very blinding at times.
Yes.
So I really loved that. And I also, I really loved that this giant, like, Harry is just essentially... gets through this and he's just like, I promised him anything and I wish I hadn't done that because no one wants to do this. This just seems like a bad idea all across the board to everyone except Hagrid. And this is also the moment where Harry realizes that Firenze's warning, it now makes sense to him. He now gets it. He now gets the message he was supposed to deliver. And he's like, oh, crap.
Everything with Grop is not great because it's also changed the balance of the forest as well. And it's made the already, let's just say, frustrated centaurs even more frustrated with Hagrid because, Grop is basically, you know, clearing out a whole part of the forest that nobody wants to go to. But at the same time, we kind of learn what's happened with Ferenz, and the fact that Hagrid had intervened because they were basically beating him to death because he was going to go work with Dumbledore. And Hagrid intervened there. And so there's this whole layer of, like we see here, cultures, you know, as you were mentioning, like with Hermione not understanding the house elves, Hagrid not kind of really truly understanding giant culture, and then intervening on behalf of the centaurs, and like, you know, them saying you had no right to intervene, you know, your culture is not our culture, your ways are not our ways, and which there's a sense there where part of that argument I understand, but at the same time, you know, there's a point at which I think culture can't always just dictate what's right and wrong, you know, like that, because there has to be some sort of like standard, and beating somebody to death because they're trying to help people you don't like or whatever doesn't seem like the best option. So, again, there's so
much nuance.
Yeah,
it's very Star Trekian,
yeah,
right?
Yep,
it's very Star Trek. Like, they go to these new worlds and meet these new cultures, and how do we figure out, do we have, you know, how do we take our own views and values and translate them to this new culture? Same deal, right? But we have this situation where how do you find a balance of these two cultures and live together when you have certain situations with these strikingly different perspectives, you know, because they're mostly angry that he's gone into what they're calling servitude, and that he's sharing all their secrets and their knowledge that don't belong to these other people. You know, it just is two groups that are so unwilling to compromise. But of all of the rest of the tension that they've already experienced between, you know, the Order of the Phoenix and the Ministry of Magic and the teachers at Hogwarts, and then the believers versus the non-believers versus the Death Eaters. Like, there are all of these sort of, I want to say, opposing factions going on. And now we have the centaurs versus everyone else, and we have a giant in the mix. Like, it just, all of this keeps adding on. And we were talking a little while ago about Harry not having the ability to cope, and this does not help at all. You've just added one more grouping of things that he now has to, he knows is unhappy. Like, this just adds to the like giant pile of anxiety that we're dealing with in the book. And while we appreciate that, you know, that Hagrid wants to do the right thing, it's also incredibly stressful for everyone involved to be like, oh my God, just one more group we have to settle with. Like, one more group we have to make happy in this like impending war that doesn't seem to understand what's going on.
Well, it's so interesting to me too, because, you know, with the centaurs, they're mad at Ferenz because he's breaking their isolationism and he's sharing what they think of their secrets that shouldn't belong to humans. So again, there's this severe isolationism that the centaurs have cultivated, and possibly that comes from the way that humans have treated them in the first place, right? That's a good thought process that actually could be why they act the way they do. But does that make it right? You know, and I think that's what Ferenz is saying to himself. I think Ferenz believes that there is a right and wrong beyond their cultural appropriation, their cultural aspect. You know, he's thinking that there's something bigger than just themselves, what's happening. And I think helping Dumbledore is going to be key when it comes to, you know, this war that they're all in, whether they want to admit it or not. And so there's this, again, there's so much nuance. And I really like the way that she's playing with all of these things in this book and really introducing them to us all and giving us the opportunity to think through what we think about these type of issues. Because she's not telling you who's right or wrong. She's really just kind of portraying it and allowing you to make the decision. Which character do you side with and why? And so I think asking these big questions, you know, is really key. And like you said, too, it's adding so much to Harry's, you know, mental fatigue trying to figure out how to navigate all of this. And at this point, you know, obviously the centaurs will let them go because they consider the children innocents. And so they're not going to do anything to Hagrid, and Harry and Hermione's like, do you really think we should like try and go back if they're mad? And Hagrid's all, you'll be fine. They won't hurt you guys. And Harry's like, nice try. You know, trying to get them out of going to see Quirrell. And as they come out of all of this, you know, Hermione's just kind of livid, like you said before. She doesn't understand what Hagrid's playing at. She's like, of course Hagrid's going to get sacked. She's just kind of like losing it a little bit. And that's when they hear the song, Weasley is our king. And Harry immediately thinks, oh, why are they singing this song? But the song has changed because apparently not only did Gryffindor win, but Ron is the hero.
But actually the part there that I immediately took to that was that Harry was so excited because he like yells, yes, you know, and that like, yes, he did it. I'm so proud of him. And I'm in Hermione's mind where I'm like, oh God, we missed it.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God, like that's the one time that we left and had kind of given up hope on Ron is when he did it. And she's thinking through how she's going to have to explain that they weren't there and that it's going to break Ron's heart. And I'm with her. And that's where I went. And I was like, oh, for me too. I was like, oh, I'm so happy for Ron. But what a sinking feeling in my stomach that's going even lower than when I saw the giant. It's like, crap. Like this chapter just ends. And Harry's so excited because he hasn't even thought about that yet. He's just excited for Ron, which is great. And I love that. But I was like, oh man, I wish I could be that. I wish I could be Harry, and I'm totally Hermione. So
yeah. Well, and I think, you know, I think what's so beautiful about it is Harry just realizes how important this is to his friend. And like, he knows that if he has to lie a little bit to say, yes, he saw the game, it's going to be okay. Right. Like that's, yeah. And like you said, Hermione's kind of thinking more logically through it, like, oh, we didn't see it. And then I love how both of them are like, I think it's all right if we just save our news from Hagrid till tomorrow. And Hermione's like, I think that we're in no hurry.
They're both like, you know, we don't have to do anything right away. Nothing's happened yet. You know, it might not even happen. Like they're rationalizing out. Maybe Hagrid won't even get let go. Like this will never even be a thing we have to worry about. And of course, they're like looking at each other like, we know that that's totally not the case. But like, they're like, oh, we'll just put it down away. I was like, oh. It's, I feel for you.
It's great. It's a great way to end the chapter one, that little bit of humor there. So,
I ended with this quite a sinking feeling in my stomach, if we're being honest.
It's a heavy chapter. I mean, there's, like we said, there's so much going on here, and there's so much being added to this world in this book. And she really gives a lot of that to us here in this book. So I'm so happy that, you know, we reached chapter 30. I mean, we're ready to rock and roll with the rest of this book. I mean, it is, everything is downhill from here. Everything she's been setting up is about to start to pay off, and I can't wait to get there, Drea. So before we do, though, of course, this chapter is over. So where can everybody find you if they want to catch up with you and see what's going on in life? Maybe they want to talk a little Harry Potter.
Sure. You can find me on Instagram at Drea Kaufman or on Twitter at PCF Trick.
And you can find me here on Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd under the name Matt Rushing 02. I'm on the network doing another show called Aggressive Negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. You can also find me over on the Trek FM network doing two shows. One is called The Orb with Chris Jones talking about Star Trek Deep Space Nine. I also do the 602 Club, which is our general geek show where we talk about all of the fandoms we love, from, you know, Harry Potter to Star Wars to Marvel to DC and everything else in between that we can get in. And you can find me doing a show called Cinema Stories with my good friend Courtney, and that is where we talk about films through the lens of faith. But thank you so much for checking your outpost.
Mischief managed.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.